This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. So happy you could be with us this afternoon. And to begin this afternoon, I want to share a piece of music with you. That, of course, the theme from the BBC program Last of the Summer Wine. At the heart of the program, three single men, old friends, who are not in the autumn of their lives, but nearing the close of summer. Either unemployed or retired, they're free to engage in all manner of exploits. The BBC's Last of the Summer Wine is the longest-running sitcom in the world. The program, written by Roy Clark, has charmed generations of viewers. It first appeared on television in 1973. It has played many times in this country on public television stations, including our companion station, WILL-TV. Most of the series' episodes were produced and directed by Alan J.W. Bell. Between 1981 and last year, he produced and directed 244 episodes. And it's my pleasure to welcome him to the program this afternoon. Alan Bell is visiting WILL for a special two-hour showing of Last of the Summer Wine this evening on WILL-TV. He'll be in the television studio for this evening's program, and he'll share with viewers a special behind-the-scenes film never before seen on television. This evening's Last of the Summer Wine special on WILL-TV gets underway at 8:30. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments for our guest, Alan Bell. The phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and 800-222-WILL. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Celeste. I'm very pleased to be invited here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Well, thank you for providing the world with such a pleasure.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure for me too, not because of what I do, it's to work on the program. I say that because I watched the program before I took it over, and I really thought it was a breath of fresh air in television situation comedy, because it took the cast, it took the stories out of the studio and went off into the countryside. And when it's filmed in Yorkshire, it's going to be beautiful countryside.
Yeah, it is lovely. Now, for someone who hasn't seen the program, describe the scenery there.
Well, the scenery, it's quite rugged, really. It's very hard. It's not arable land. It's mainly sheep on it, and it's very rocky. And when I took the program over, the producer before me said, you won't stay with it long because of the hills. And I said, well, that's the beauty of it, surely. He says, but everywhere is hills. You walk along a pavement and it's on a hill. And at the end of the day, you'll find you've probably climbed half of Everest going up and down. But it's that countryside that makes it look so good on television, because it has the dry stone walls, no cement, no mortar. And they block off all the individual fields and go off onto the hills, sheep, waterfalls. It's got everything there in that one little area. And I'm talking about the area where we film, which is the Home Valley in Yorkshire. And it's near Huddersfield. And it really is a very beautiful place in a rugged sort of way.
Yeah.
It's not pretty.
Well, what is the latest now on a new season for this series?
Well, we had a new new controller of BBC One arrived and decided to rest us for the filming this year. But she has now announced that it's definitely coming back next year. So there's no question about that. And we've in the past not filmed a year, but next year there is another series to go out. And when we film the following year, we'll probably film it in the early part of the year and show it in September. So.
And that'll be series 30?
Oh, they go by numbers now. It would be series AF, it's probably 30, yes. Yeah.
Wow. Speaking of a breath of fresh air, the music that we heard, the composition of Ronnie Hazelhurst, just lovely. And it's just right, but I understand that it was an uphill struggle to get the BBC to accept it.
Yeah, well, it was in the days when, lots of Summer Wine was a breakthrough. because film inserts were generally a car going down the street, someone gets out, goes through a door, cut to the studio. And this was the other way around. They probably started inside and then go outside, and the sequences were 4 or 5 minutes long, which is quite long. But the situation at that time was that a comedy show had bright, cheery comedy music, and Ronnie wrote something which he felt completely told the story, in a way, of bygone days when it was a different world. Mm-hmm. And these people, these men, Last of the Summer Wine, it was the end, not the end, but they were reliving their lives, having been made redundant. And Ronnie felt that his music summed all that up, and it was evocative of Yorkshire too. But the BBC weren't too pleased with it. They asked him to jazz it up, and he said, I'll show you what it sounds like. It's a waltz. It's a gentle waltz. Yeah. And he had to fight for it. In the same way, the original title was the BBC wanted to call it the Library Mob, which is absurd.
Yeah.
But that wonderful Last of the Summer Wine, they're reliving their youth as elderly people.
Yeah. One of the ways that I think of the show is if you had Huck Finn or Tom Sawyer all grown up with a couple of their best friends.
That's exactly it, exactly it. And it doesn't matter who they are. I know we've changed the characters. I mean, everybody said, well, the way that it was structured was, of course, Compo was the rough one who never went to school, ate worms, that sort of thing. The one in the middle was a bank clerk and... he was a linoleum salesman. And the military chap had been in the army and regarded everybody as his lieutenants. And that's how the structure was. There was three classes there. And we've tried to maintain that over the years.
Yeah. And Compo, his name means?
Below, and yes. Compo, the word and the name Compo, it comes from the word compensation. And to be on the compensation in Yorkshire, or in Britain rather, was to be on the dole.
Yeah, on welfare.
And he never... worked.
We've got a listener who would like to talk with you, so put your headphones on so you can hear the caller. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Alan Bell. He produced and directed The Lion's Share of the BBC program Last of the Summer Wine, and he is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. If you'd like to talk with us, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Listener in Urbana on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
Really enjoy the program. And I'm glad you go out in the country, as you said, because we live, as you must notice now, very flat and lots of corn and soybeans. The last series that WILL ran had Alvin in it, and I quite liked his character. Is that somebody that we'll see again somehow?
Yes, he certainly... And good afternoon, nice to speak to you. Alvin, played by Brian Murphy, is a character that came in for one episode, and everybody liked him so much, as do you, that we brought him back as a regular. But what's happened in the last 2 years is that... And I have to say this with enormous love, that both Peter Salis and Frank Thornton, aged 88, are really too old to take into the hilly countryside where we film. So we've reduced their role in the program, and Brian has taken a role which is something like what Clegg's was in the early days. And Bert Kwok, who's the probably best...
I like him too.
Yeah, we all do. But Bert, who was in the Pink Panther films and was so successful there, he plays a sort of Compo-ish part. It could be the other way around. It's not that clearly defined. And we brought in a very popular comedy actor called Russ Abbott, who is... he had his own series for several years, and in the last few years he's been working in the theatre. And Russ Abbott, who plays this milkman who had strong ties with MI5, or so he says, and Alvin and Bert Kwok are the new trio. Now, Brian Murphy, is a very experienced actor because he had his own series on Thames Television for years called George and Mildred. And he knows television inside out, and they work together, they rehearse together, and the filming is so pleasant. So in answer to your question, yes, Alvin, Brian Murphy, is playing a regular part in the series, and thank goodness we have him because he's so professional.
Goody, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Other calls are invited this afternoon, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, the most famous trio is probably Bill Owen and Peter Salas and Brian Wilde. And Bill Owen and Brian Wilde are no longer with us. And I would imagine that Bill Owen's death in particular was hard for the cast and crew and writer Roy Clark.
Mm. It was all the more so because he died while we were filming.
Yeah.
And the first filming we did in the year 1999 was in France because it was an episode, a special, I don't think you've seen it here, called them Last Post and Pigeon. And the idea was that Compo had won a competition to go to France and see where he was in Dunkirk before the evacuation. And the council decided at the last minute he's too scruffy to represent the town, and they cancel him. But the whole community chip in, and he eventually goes to France. Well, filming started in France that year, and Bill was obviously not well. He was very thin, and for the first time ever, wasn't good with his lines. And we were filming on a ferry leaving the Dover with the white cliffs. And Bill, we did about five or six takes to try and get Bill's lines, and it was very difficult. And I thought, this is very serious. And we filmed in France, and he wasn't well. And we came back to London. We did some of the filming for four episodes. And Peter Salas insisted that he went for a checkup, and he was diagnosed as having cancer. And the prognosis was that he would die within 2 to 6 weeks.
Mm. I'm sorry. Well, that character, Compo, was just so wonderful.
I'll carry on. Sorry, it's very emotional.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Anyway, knowing that he only had a few weeks to live, I had to change the schedule somewhat. And I filmed it so that he went into the betting shop and we didn't have to have him in that episode. And then, of course, he actually died, not in the studio, but while we were filming at Pinewood Studios. I brought the filming all forward for him, but he didn't make it. No. Sorry.
Mm. I'm sorry. Have the actors who played the men of this trio, has the cast been close to one another? I would imagine so, because they work so wonderfully well as an ensemble.
The answer to that is no, they don't work. I mean, they work well together, but socially, no. Not at all. No. Brian Wilde would stay at an inn about 4 miles beyond Huddersfield. Bill would have a cottage in Holmfirth, and Peter Salas would stay in the Unit Hotel in Huddersfield. And they rarely met up. And Brian notoriously had given an interview to a journalist and had said that he didn't particularly like Bill because of his politics. He was a little bit on the red side, to be honest. And Bill, that was it. Bill and Brian never spoke. But they worked together very well. And I think the classic trio was Bill Owen, Peter Salas, and Brian Wilde, Compo, yeah. Clegg, and Foggy.
Yeah. Now, Clegg, Peter Salas is Clegg. He's been in every episode?
Yeah, he has, yeah. And very, very good he is, too. Yeah. But he, as I say, 88, you can't have him...
No.
Struggling across. Yeah. He fell down a hole last time he was up in Yorkshire on the moors. We didn't see it was a little hole about a foot deep, but it could have been really serious. And a more younger man, it wouldn't have been a major problem at all.
Yeah.
But Peter would give anything to work on this. He'd do anything for it. He would promote the program. He would work for nothing. And we've had to reduce his fee for doing next to nothing in the filming. But he doesn't care. He says, I just want to carry on being in it. So.
Yeah, yeah. And the cast, most Americans, I suspect, don't really know them outside of this program, but they're so accomplished. Mm-hmm. Tell us about their past.
Well, yes, Peter Salas was a very well-known television actor. He'd been in. He was very famous for playing, I've forgotten who, Samuel Pepys. And he was very, very, very well received, and he was a very reliable actor in film and on the stage. Bill Owen was also a stage actor, but mainly did film work. And he's known for Carry On films and great British Army things. He always played privates in the Army. And Brian Wilde, well, he was another actor. He mainly did television, but they had years and years of experience. And that applies to our guests as well. Most of our actors have been really big in other areas. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, reap the benefit of all that.
Yeah. And here's another reason the show is a breath of fresh air or a breakthrough. It's because the cast are older people. They're mature people. This is something we just don't see.
Yeah, it is a sad thing in life that people rather regard people over 60 as getting past it and unable to do anything with their lives. And I've had a lot of letters from elderly viewers that say, thank you, thanks to Summer Wine, we go for walks in the countryside now. We don't roll down hills in bars or spare tyres that are lying around. But we go out and we look at the scenery. We don't look out the window as much. And I think that's good if we've been an inspiration to people to do something with their lives. But basically speaking, old people in television is not a really popular thing to do.
No.
But the BBC, of course, when it started, they were 50, 55 and 56. That's not old. But, of course, over the years, they've got old with the programme. Mm. Ronnie, who wrote that music, said about 4 or 5 years ago that they're now the age that is exactly right for the series. They were, at that time, the actors were about 70, 75. And I think he was right. There is a right time for it. And the viewers all regarded them as being icons and they copy. I'm pleased about that.
Yeah. Who's the audience for this program in Britain?
What kind of audience?
Yeah.
Well, it's very strange because every series has a laughter track. I don't know if you're aware of that. And it's not canned laughter. We hire a big studio in London and show it on an enormous screen, and the audience laughter we pick up, we put on another show around it. Amazingly, the take-up on tickets is from about 45 upwards and from about 8 to 15. That's the most popular range. And I couldn't understand why children liked it so much. And the reason is they really wished their grandparents were like that.
Right, right. And for some kids, I think their grandparents are good buddies.
That's right, but that's the reason that we're popular in those ages. The middle groups, of course, shouldn't be watching television in any case. So it's getting outside.
They should be out making a living. How did you come to the show? You said you were a fan of the show, but how did you come to be producer and director when you did?
Well, I had a sort of run of luck, you could say, because I had done, at short notice, 2 episodes of Michael Palin's Ripping Yarns, which fortunately won a BAFTA award. And then I did a series called Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the TV version, which was also achieved awards. So I was what they call hot stuff, an upstart at, you know, whatever age I was, but I was popular. So Summer Wine came up as they needed a producer, and they thought, well, he's done all this film, let him do it. And I had been to Home Firth purely it was to make film an insert for a program, and Home Firth was the base of a silent movie industry. And this program I was working for was whether a statement was made, which was either true or false. And there was a silent film industry in Home Firth. So when I filmed it, I made it look as though it was rubbish. We were talking. Of course, everybody said there wasn't, but there was. So I had just come back from home filming in Home Firth when the head of comedy, John Howard Davis, who incidentally is the little boy in David Lee's film that played Oliver Twist, threw the script on his office desk and said, I want you to do this. And I said, you've no idea where I've just come from Home Firth. He said, good, well, you'll know it. And that was how it started. And I wasn't popular with the actors to start with because they liked the way the previous director had done it, which is to put them all together and let them act the scene and then shoot it from every direction, whereas I always shoot only what's on the film. And they didn't like having to hit marks for the moving camera. grumble, grumble, grumble. But in the end, they realized it was the best way to work.
Yeah. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Did I understand correctly that you shoot the summer wine without the laugh track, that you use live audience?
Yeah. Well, yes, we don't. The audience isn't there when we film the scenes. We film it entirely on now. It used to be entirely on film, but now it's on high definition tape. It's completed, and while we're filming it, I leave gaps for the laughs, and then we go to Teddington Studios, mic up, put mics above the audience. The actors come along. Peter Sallis comes along, Frank Thornton, and Russ Abbott, the new man. And they perform in front of the audience just to keep them happy. Make it worthwhile, because who the heck's going to go to a studio and watch two finished programs? I mean, you stay at home and watch them. So it's a huge success. And when the films go, we record their laughter, and it works extremely well.
Okay, now it's not clear to me whether the laughter that's on the television is actually the spontaneous, genuine laughter of the audience as they watch the show.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, that at Teddington, they watch the show and we record their laughter.
All right, that's excellent.
Yeah, that's it. And sometimes the laugh is too big and we've got to take it off. And then we dub a lesser one on, because it's would be a shame to miss a funny line. So we put a shorter one. It does get doctored, I'll be very honest. Mm. And if a very funny line, it gets...
All right, but you are not using any of these so-called laughter.
No. The BBC wouldn't allow us to do it for a start, because they have principles.
I often worry that in the United States, the children's understanding of reality is getting distorted. They watch these rather inane sitcoms. Yeah. And they apparently see these grown-ups and other people laughing at something that's hardly laughable.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's a slippery slope, because if you put a laugh on something, you've got to put it on everything. Someone comes in, good morning, ha, 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 you know, it's silly. It really is silly.
Although that was funny.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Another listener in Champaign. Line two, hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I was just curious. You know, British comedies are very popular, as you're well aware, in public television in the United States. We had three David Croft. We had Are You Being Served, Dad's Army, and Hello, Hello. I wonder whether you have any others that... could come over here. Have you worked on any others that are available for public television?
Well, the answer to that is I did give a little run through of my history prior to Summer Wine, which was Ripping Yarns, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and then that. And I felt I've got in a rut for 28 years. I haven't had time to do other things, I'm afraid. The only other thing I did was a drama called Lost for Words, but that's with Thora Hird. But comedies, no. I haven't done any other comedies, I'm afraid. A bit talentless in that area.
Well, there's still time.
Oh, thank you. I need the money.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, television producer and director Alan J.W. Bell. He has produced and directed most of the series episodes of Last of the Summer Wine. Between 1981 and last year, he produced and directed 244 episodes. And he is with us this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine as part of his visit to WILL Radio and Television. This evening, there will be a special two-hour showing of Last of the Summer Wine on WILL-TV. And our guest, Alan Bell, will be in the television studio for this evening's program. And he'll share with viewers a special behind-the-scenes film never before seen on television. This evening's Last of the Summer Wine special on WILL-TV gets underway at 8:30. And we're pleased to have him here on the Afternoon Magazine this afternoon. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free 800-222-9455. You mentioned Thora Hird, so we got to talk about the women. Tell us about Thora Hird playing Edie.
Well, Thora My wife, she watched an afternoon program, and Thora went before, long before she worked on Summer Wine, said it was her favourite series, Last of Summer Wine, and a part came up for her to play the character Wesley, his wife Edie. And of course, my wife said, why don't you use Thora Hird? And I said, well, she's a bit big for a series, because she was a big film star. Mm-hmm. But we approached, and of course she leapt at the chance, and she was so good. I mean, she got the character straight away, and she has that... she understands comedy so much, so beautifully. She was absolutely wonderful. So she did this... She played in this special, which was called Uncle of the Bride, and she was so popular that we asked her to come back and be in the series, and she agreed to do that. And she was with us for about 17 years, believe it or not. No, more than that, it'd be 20 years. Uh-huh. And playing the same part. And over those years, you could see her getting more and more frail, but never miss the opportunity to get the most out of a line. She was marvellous.
Yeah. And other women in the cast, Kathy Staff, of course.
Yes.
And,
well, she died in I think it was November last year.
Yeah.
Sadly. And Kathy was more of a character actress. It only really played the same sort of character. But she was, and I say this because he's 4,000 miles away, but Roy Clark, all the women in Summer Wine are based on Roy Clark's first wife. And she was a lovely lady, but she was tough and bossed him around, take your shoes off, don't come in here. And made him sit down. There was a story about Roy, which Enid, his wife, told me that she went one day and he was in the garden sitting having a drink. And she said, have you finished episode 4 of Summer Wine? And he said, I thought I wouldn't work today. And she said, you're working. And sent him through to sit and write the script. Oh. Now, she was tough. And that knowing Enid, Roy's first wife, I could see so many bits of it.
Well, then, is there a story behind the character of Marnie?
Marina.
I'm sorry.
Well, again, it's a little bit of Enid in there. I mean, Enid was always very well dressed and blonde hair, mm-hmm. and she smoked too much, which eventually killed her, I have to say, sadly. But no, there's a little bit of Enid in Marina as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to be slanderous, but I'll tell you that I know that he uses everything in life that happens as inspiration for his scripts and bits in it. He just observes. And I was watching a program, previewed a Christmas episode about 20 years ago, and Roy sat on one side and his wife on the other. And the scene came up where Thora's writing out Christmas cards and Wesley puts his head in the door and says, did you want me? She said, yes, sit down. I want you to write out your Christmas cards. And he said, I think I'll leave that to you. And she said, you're going to write them. If you think I'm sending Christmas cards to Messrs. Hard to Find Motor Spares Limited, you've got another thing coming. At that point, Roy sneaked out. And she said to me, that was me 6 months ago. And anything I do turns up on the screen, which is good. You know, writer writing about life.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could talk about what happens when you get hold of the script. It lands in your hands for the first time, and you read through it. Do you have a vision of how it's going to look and how the story will unfold with the characters walking through it? Do you have what it looks like, what it sounds like?
It's probably the difference between me and other people. I read the script, and of course, there's a lot of gasps. Oh gosh, how am I going to do that? But basically speaking, you see, I was originally a film editor. A film editor's got to be able to select the most important parts of something to present it, the story you're telling. Mm-hmm. And so that when I read the script, I think that could be funnier if Roy writes something there, and rather than do that, do something else. I'm trying to think of an example. Well, there was a scene in one of the episodes where Compos was supposed to be lying on a wall watching Nora hanging out her washing. And at the end of it, she prods him and he falls off the wall. Well, where we film, it would have killed him because the wall was about 20 feet up and the only other place would fall on the stairs, which would maim him. So I changed it to him sitting in a deck chair watching with sunglasses on watching Nora, which is a much funnier setup. And at the end of it, the deck chair collapses and he falls backwards. Well, on the fall backwards, of course, it was a stuntman, which couldn't have been on the other one because he was in shot speaking at the time. So I changed them to make them filmable and improve from the ideas. But the one thing I'd never do is change the words. And when I see the script as it progresses, I see a finished program. I know exactly. I could write down what all the shots are before we even go filming, which is good or bad. I don't know. I can change it if there's a better idea comes up. But basically, read the script and understand. I understand exactly how it's going to be told.
Yeah. Well, thinking back on some of the episodes where they do some really, the characters do some really wacky stunts. I mean, bicycles connected together and Campo in a flying in a suit of feathers.
Roy has a basic idea, which is always good, but sometimes they're not filmable. So then I change them. And I like to think I change them for the better. It's a good combination that I think of visual comedy, and Roy's brilliant with the words.
Yeah.
And there's no question about that. His writing is superb.
Where and how did you learn your craft? You said you were an editor before becoming producer and director.
Then I came into the BBC as I moved across from being a film editor to being an assistant producer and assisting producers. And of course, coming from film, whenever there was some filming to do, they always said, would you do it because you know what you're doing? Because in the early days of television, I'm talking about early days, I've actually been working for the BBC for 51 years, believe it or not. And in the early days, the BBC had drawn from various parts of the media, that from the theatre, from film, and wherever, to get its producers. And there was no training. People just learned, and the BBC just took what people did. So when I went over to being an assistant producer, I was the film man, and it worked out well for everybody insofar as they knew it would be all right.
How did you get that job first time out with the BBC?
I had made a lot of amateur movies with a friend of mine as a young man, 15, and they had got sort of awards and nothing really prestigious, but they'd got awards, and I liked film. My personal joke is to put something that I did in one of my amateur films into the series. That's a little laugh up my sleeve to myself that I did this 60 years ago.
Wow. So what kind of films did you make as a young man?
Well, they were always the things they say amateurs shouldn't make, which is story films, comedies and things like that. But never anything that was of any worth, looking back. But the fun was making them.
Yeah. Well, it got you to the BBC.
It did, yes, it did. Well, they asked me on the appointment board. They had, in those days, I think they probably still had five people, the head of the department, personnel, etc. They asked me how I saw myself, when I was 19 at the time, how I saw myself in 5 years' time. And I said, rather pluckily and cheekily, I said, oh, as a director. And rather than them fall back laughing, they just looked down the pad and made a note. And I thought, oh, I've done well.
Yeah. Well, when I was starting out, a friend of mine who was older, he said, well, when you go to the interview, he said, they're going to ask you this question. And he said, you tell them you want to be Susan Stamberg, who was then host of All Things Considered, the National Public Radio program. So, and actually, that's not bad advice.
Well, I think the truth is that the people on the board, they're good at their jobs, but they're looking for reasons for choosing people. And I think if you answer the question the same stereotype way, they don't separate you from the crowd. I used to tell people when they went for boards to be contentious, say something that will upset them, so that instead of asking the next question, what would you do if, they'll say, what do you mean by that? And then you've got the floor for 20 minutes and you can talk about it, something you know about. And at the end of the day, they'll remember you because you were not one of the crowd that answered all the other things. A lesson for all your listeners.
Yeah, very good. If you're looking for a job,
be contentious.
Notes. Yes. Entirely on film in 1992, Last of the Summer Wine. Was it difficult to make that transition? I mean, you said the cast wasn't really pleased about it, but how was that choice made?
Well, it was because of Kodak. They said, we've used Kodak film, Eastman Color, and their head of UK division said, look, it's such a lovely series, all the scenery. the film looks good, but when you go to the studio, it looks like TV studio, and it hasn't got the same feel to it. Why don't you make one episode all film for the archives so that in years to come they can pull one out and see it entirely the same quality? And I thought about it, and I thought, well, let's budget and see whether we could do 11 episodes all on film. And the cost of a live studio at the time was about $50,000, $55,000 a day because of the ancillary people. You know, you've got recording engineers, the people in the racks upstairs, the people in the gallery. A lot of money, lighting, building the set every week, taking it down. I reckon that we could build the sets twice a year at a film studio, which is what we do, and decided to do it all on film. And it was a bit of a worry to start with because I realised that it was taking on a lot to do a 30-minute programme in 6 days, which it is, I mean, two on location and four in the studio. And I was really rushing it along, and I told all the actors, I'm sorry, but you have to do what I say. Don't question it. So in other words, look at the door and say, good morning, and that would be it. They've cut onto the next one, and it was all right. And if you see the 92s, they're a little bit, they don't quite gel. They're not bad, but what I do now is I take a bit more time, and it's done at the same pace. But I was really worried to start with. Maybe I'd bit off too much, but it worked well.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite season or a favourite episode? I'm sure you get this question all the time.
Yeah, well, not really, but my favourite season was the first I did because I had been warned before I went that at least a week would be lost because of the weather, the rain and the wind and up in Yorkshire, notorious for it. And when I got up there, it was blue sky practically every day, and there were wonderful scripts. It was the one with Compo in a wetsuit, from wetsuit to wellies, and every episode was a gem, really was, and I really thoroughly enjoyed it. Of course, I came back with these wonderful pictures from Yorkshire, and other people couldn't believe it, you know, that you'd had such good luck. I always say probably I'm blessed from above. Mm. I mean that, too. I'm very lucky.
Oh, knock on wood. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, television producer and director Alan Bell. He has produced and directed the lion's share of Last of the Summer Wine. It is the longest-running sitcom in the world. The program, written by Roy Clark, has charmed generations of viewers. It first appeared on television in 1973. It has played many times in this country on public television stations, including our companion station, WILL-TV. Alan Bell is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He's visiting Campbell Hall today and tomorrow. This evening, he will be on our companion station, WILL-TV. He will be here in the building downstairs in the television studio for a special 2-hour showing of Last of the Summer Wine. He will be in the television studio, and he'll share with viewers a special behind-the-scenes film never before seen on television. This evening's Last of the Summer Wine special gets underway at 8:30. In the meantime, listeners, if you'd like to talk with Mr. Bell, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. So what happens? What kind of stories will you tell or have you told in this behind-the-scenes film?
What? The reason for the behind-the-scenes film is the audience previews that we've talked about, getting them to laugh. So I thought when an audience go to see a normal situation comedy, they'll sit in an audience roster of about 300 seats and they will watch the interiors being played before them. That's standard situation comedy practice, Frasier programs like that. Mm. And we had no interiors to show them because it had already been filmed. So I thought, when they go along to the studio, it's not just seeing the thing done. They look at all the lights and the cameras, and they're seeing the artist in the flesh. So what I thought we would do is show them the background to how the program is made, see the stars sitting talking to them, as they perhaps might do had it been done as previously. So we made this 20-minute film, and we have to update it because of cast going and things like that. But it shows quite well. I think it's quite revealing showing how we make the program.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener in Farina, Illinois, line 4. Hi.
Hi. I unfortunately never seen your program. They didn't carry it on my PBS station. But what caught my ear on this interview was that you said you directed the Ripping Yarns programs. Is that correct? You directed them?
I directed the last two that was made, but then they stopped making them because they were too expensive. So.
Yeah, those are, to me, some of the funniest things I've ever seen on television. My compliments. That's why I had to call
Thank
in.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. Well, the only two I did was the one, it was called Winfrey's Last Case, about the retired spy going down to Cornwall and finding he's booked into a house with lots of Germans.
Yeah.
And the other one was about the footballer, Golden Gordon.
Yes,
which was difficult for me because I don't play football and don't understand it. So I had to keep saying, could someone tell me what you do here? Do you kick the thing into the ball into the goals or whatever? But we got through it.
There's Michael Palin is, comedy genius, of course. Have you worked with him in other projects, or have you worked with any of the other Monty Python alumni?
Well, no, John Cleese did a... Well, Michael said to me when we were filming the football episode that John, because they were a very close little group of people, even though they didn't live together, they all met up all the time. John Cleese had said he'd like to just make an appearance in Ripping Yarns to say he'd done it. So I said, why doesn't he play the man that passes by as Michael Palin character? His wife shouts out to him, Gordon, I'm having a baby, as he cycles off. And there's a passerby in the script who turns and looks. That's all it said on the script. So John thought that was a great idea. And we filmed John doing it, just one shot. And he did it very well. And if we just had an actor, it wouldn't have been nearly as funny. Anyway, remembering... And also I said that because it was really only an extra part, I said that we really can't afford to pay him his full fee. We'll give him what he would have got had he been an extra. So John Cleese, for that part in Ripping Yarns, got £28. And he says he's put the actual check in a frame and it's on his wall. But remembering that, I asked John to come and play a little cameo again at the end of an episode called Welcome to Earth, and it was one where some UFO fanatic thinks that there's going to be a landing of a spacecraft, and it all ends with Howard and Marina on some rocks. Sorry, you won't understand this, but basically the story was all over when it was revealed what the strange lights were on the moors, and they set off down the hill. And I thought it'd be very funny if instead of just rolling the credits, we just let it go a bit further, and the bike goes over a wall and goes past the moon like an E.T.
Yeah.
And lands, and out of the mist comes forward this other UFO freak who waves an olive branch and says, welcome to Earth to these people. And John did it, and he loved doing it. We filmed it at the end. He'd been filming the program about Frankenstein at Shepperton, and we went along in the early evening and filmed him there. But he loved doing it, but I only paid him £50 for it.
Are you still? I'm looking forward to seeing your last of the Summer Wine programs. Are you still doing them? Or?
Well, we finished filming last. We finished making the last series in November, and then the BBC decided to rest it for a year and take breath and have a look to see how it can proceed. They insist it's not being axed, or that was my interpretation. But they insist it's not, and there's been lots of meetings at the BBC, and they guarantee it's coming back next year. Which is fine, because everybody I know that has seen the program, they like it. I hope you will.
Yeah, I think I will. I like most British.
Well, it takes a little bit of getting into, because there's no jokes in it. It's just remarks, just very funny lines. And Roy Clark writes beautiful scripts. When we run the films at the previews, I always ask the ticket unit not to get people over 80, because they tend not to listen. A terrible thing to say, but they tend not to listen and they only watch the visuals. But the words are really good.
Right. I just one more question on the. Well, since you brought up John Cleese, what's your opinion of Fawlty Towers? I think that is just episode for episode genius.
Yeah. Well.
Thank you. I'll hang up now. Thank you.
No. I loved the series. We were filming Ripping Yarns as John was doing Fawlty Towers, and everybody loved working on it, but the scripts were so funny, and but it could never be made with anyone but John Cleese. He wrote it with his wife, and he wrote it for himself, and he knew what he could do. And I just think it's classic television. Mm. But I have to say, sorry, Celeste, yeah. I have to say that I think that Frasier, of all the TV comedies, is probably the best ever because it's so consistently good. And it's run on UK TV, and I watch them all because I think they're so funny.
Yeah. Anything else out there that you enjoy watching American television? Any bright spots?
There's quite a few, actually. I can't remember off the top of my head. But I mean, I used to, strange enough, I was watching a Lucille Ball show, and you may say, oh, well, that's based. But in fact, she set out very cleverly to make comedy that would make the nation laugh, and she succeeded. Let's face it, she wouldn't have been making them for 12 years if it wasn't wildly successful. And they are funny. I was watching a rerun up here in Chicago, and they're funny episodes, and they're very good. And I think we learned a lot from American comedy. There's no question about that. And I think Summer Wine, in a way, it has American feel to it. Because it's not just people sitting in a row, standing in a row, saying lines. There's something that's much more far-reaching than that. It's got a depth to it. I hope you watch anyway.
Yeah. Summer Wine. Why have the Britcoms been? We got to wrap up here. Why have the Britcoms been so successful? What is it about the BBC? What's in the water at the BBC? There have been so many successful Britcoms, as they're called here.
Yeah, I think the reason for that could be that the BBC was always an organization which was charged with getting the best of everything. And when someone came with an idea, they wouldn't say, how much is this going to cost and let's look at the audience that it's likely to get. They would make it because it was good to make. It was right to make it. And if it did get very bad audiences, of course, they would pull the plug on it. But basically, they gave shows a chance, like The Office, for example. I mean, I personally don't think it's funny. That's me. But it is immensely successful, and 10 out of 10 to the BBC for letting it go, because potentially it wasn't that strong. Mm. Now, if they'd taken it to ITV, there'd have been committees looking at it saying, well, we're not sure about that, and there's no joke on that page, etc., etc. BBC was never worked with committees.
Mm. Could take some risks.
Mm. Exactly.
Okay. There we have to leave it. We're out of time. It's really been a delight talking with you this afternoon. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much, and it's been a delight being talked to by you.
Alan Bell has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. This evening, he will be in the studio of WILL-TV for this evening's program, a special two-hour showing of Last of the Summer Wine, and he'll share with viewers a special behind-the-scenes film never before seen on television. It all gets underway on WILL-TV this evening at 8:30.